What up, what up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John and I here. Wednesday night, you will be hearing us Thursday morning after a 15-minute overrun on AEW Dynamite. We had to put in 15 more minutes tonight to do this podcast. So hopefully our podcast isn't 15 minutes longer than usual.
No. We're going to make those minutes back for you folks that watch this show. And was bait and switched, in my opinion, by Tony Khan. Because, you know, when you say there's an overrun and you're promoting it and all this, you know, like people are, you're getting people excited about something big's going to happen.
This is my whole argument, too. Let's save it because we'll have this bigger conversation once we start talking about Dynamite. A quick note, which is, I think I mentioned this last week, that next week I'm going to be out of town without the ability to watch any wrestling, really, and do any podcasts. So all of the podcasts that I do for the Wrestling Observer, F4W, this one, We're Live Pal, and the show, the Friday night show that I do with Dave, Wrestling Observer Radio, I won't be able to do any of those shows. So instead, so that we don't go dark, we talked about not wanting to go dark in this feed, I am going to talk to Larry Dallas over the weekend. And so we're not really going to cover a show, obviously, because it's you know, we can't have a show on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then we posted on Wednesday, and all the stuff that we talked about is kind of outdated already. Like, wrestling moves so fast. So we're going to have a little bit more of a general discussion about his job as a broadcaster. He is going to be doing the color at Triple Mania, the third Triple Mania, which is going to be on Fight. And so I want to talk to him just about, you know, because Dave and I talked to him, I think, right before he did his first Dragon Gate show, or maybe it was before his second one. I don't exactly remember, but this is a few years back. And, you know, he's done Dragon Gate stuff. He's done Triple Mania. So he is about to do the third Triple Mania. And I want to talk to him just to have a conversation. I'm kind of interested, you know, for me, I'm really interested in the broadcasting stuff. So hopefully people will dig that. But we'll record some of it for video, too. So we'll put some of the clips up on the F4W video channel, the YouTube channel. And basically, Larry will be my co-host for the week. And he and I will do that over the weekend. And then we'll put it up Wednesday in the normal slot. And it just won't be me and John talking about Dynamite. So we'll skip the 1 week. And then the following week, Dynamite's going to be on Tuesday. Did you realize that?
Yes, the big war return.
Yes. So I'm kind of, we should sort of figure this out. We haven't even talked about it yet, so we're kind of talking about it on the air. Mm-hmm. But it would be fun to do a little bit of comparing and contrasting, kind of like the old days when they were on at the same time. It might be, I don't know if we'd be able to, I mean, we could still record it Wednesday. But that might be, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see about that. That might be a little bit of a big lift.
I'm curious to see what WWE is going to do with NXT that night. But from what I saw yesterday, I don't know if I'm expecting too much. I was kind of disappointed when I watched the show last night. Yeah. I'm going to talk about it this week on my Take It Home podcast. I have to talk about the show. And I'll talk about it on that podcast in more detail. But I tuned in, and basically I felt like, other than the logo change, it felt like the same show, some really bad skits, some good talented wrestlers, some good young wrestlers, some bad wrestler, young wrestlers. I don't know. I didn't feel like a new direction, really, in my opinion, at least. And maybe they're waiting for another target date to really relaunch it, but I was kind of really disappointed yesterday watching NXT.
That was my argument when people were like, Black and Gold's coming back. I was like, it can't. All the guys are in AEW. Like, it can't come back. Now, if they reinvent what the Black and Gold means, then sure. But I just figured it was going to be the same roster, and they're just going to change the colors. And you know, they can still do stuff in the future to further distinguish the brand from the old brand. But I couldn't imagine how different it could be other than just the color changes.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, maybe they did not. It's not like they really promoted as a season premiere or anything. I remember seeing that. So maybe they're waiting on a different date to kind of do it. I still think it's some changes have to happen. Maybe, of course, a lot of people, a lot of UK talent is back in, I guess, probably in the UK, getting their stuff together to come here, you know, back. So maybe the quality will improve once that crew mostly comes back. So we'll see. But
I think the opportunity really is TakeOver. I think that's the opportunity to change things up or to really put the stamp on it, is if they bring back TakeOver. And that, because I mean, you know, before we even had Dynamite and these AEW pay-per-views and you know, the all this wrestling battle of the belts, like that was our fix, right? Was TakeOver. It's like, oh, WWE's main roster is going to do it this way, and when you want to see the really good wrestling, it's these TakeOver shows. So that's a really good opportunity for them to sort of figure it out.
Well, Halloween Havoc's coming up. I'm sure it's going to be just matches and good matches at that. I saw some good stuff that I did like. I really like Damon Kemp.
I've been hearing good things about him.
I think he's doing a great job. So I'll talk, like I said, talking more about this weekend on the Take It Home podcast. But can I do a quick little happy birthday wish?
Yeah.
Or happy wish. Happy birthday to my wife. Going to be 36.
Oh, you're giving it away.
Yeah.
Giving her age away.
That's okay. She's
so
still
let me think about this.
Vibrant, beautiful. And
when I would have met your wife, she was still like 27?
Yeah.
Because I've known you for about 9 years, I think.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yep.
She was a baby back then.
Still is. No. She's great.
Well, I mean, but back then, right? So when I first would have met you both, you know, you guys were married for a few years already.
No kids yet.
No kids. And now there's three of them. And you have your home, your home and, you know, everything that goes with, having, you know, your family. So that it's quite the difference from when I first met y'all. And that's it's kind of cool about, you know, the evolution of friendships and stuff. You get to see all of those things happen. So I caught you guys at a really good time.
Yeah, it's been great. So happy birthday, babe. Love you.
All right. So we go from happy birthday to Katrina to Sammy and Andrade.
Oh, my God. I'm going to break your face. What the hell happened?
He's good. Oh, man. So, okay. So this happened. You know, Andrew Zarian and I talked about something. We're Live Pal yesterday. And, you know, basically the gist of that conversation for both of us was, you know, we're kind of tired of it as fans, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just after the Sammy and Eddie stuff and then after the Punk scrum and the Elite, it really doesn't mean anything directly to fans if people don't like each other in the locker room. Like, it really doesn't matter. They just have to get along, you know, in the ring. Mm-hmm. But when you actually have to suspend people and send people home, then the product itself is affected. And as a fan, you want to see them put out the best product that they possibly can put out every week. And since All Out, we haven't seen CM Punk, we haven't seen the Elite. And this stuff like this happens where Andrade, you know, Andrade's out there, man. He's talking, he's posting, mm-hmm. he's tweeting. He seems to be unhappy, though I don't know anything directly related to that story. You know, if I'm just sort of looking at it from the outside perspective, he looks like he doesn't really want to be there. You know,
it's pretty clear. Thing is pretty clear.
Yeah,
on that
for whatever reason, right? Because you know, he was unhappy at the other place too, and so, you know, the grass is greener again, maybe, or maybe he's just, you know, he has to sort of reconsider what his wrestling career is going to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he signed to AEW. Tony Khan made the statement like, I'm not getting rid of any of you guys. So, you know, you should probably chill out. That didn't work in this scenario because, you know, these guys are frustrated with each other. And Andrade and Sammy had their little back and forth in Twitter. And This is just an optics thing. This is an Andrew Zarian word. I'm stealing his word. He uses the word optics a lot, so I like it. So I'm stealing it. I'm shoplifting his word. The optics of two of your talent arguing with each other on Twitter looks very, very JV.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in WWE because the talent seem to be scared out of their life to do something like that. And I don't know if there's a WWE professional class. Maybe there is where they're saying, okay, this is how we do it, and we, you guys can't do it this way. But AEW needs something like that because, you know, just the remarks and the tweets. Now, some of the AEW talent does a very good job with the Twitter and kind of staying in character. But then there's others where you're just like, yikes, why would you even post that to the public? Like, it just shows bad on you. And it's so negative on you that I would be embarrassed if I wrote something like that on Twitter. And they have, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers in some cases. So that happened. And it was, you know, everyone's discussing it yesterday. And then it kind of becomes like, okay, we're done with this topic. And then before Dynamite, story breaks that there was some sort of physical altercation. Some people are calling it a backstage fight. The reason why I'm not saying like it was a fight or not is because when the Sammy and Eddie Kingston thing was originally reported, that was reported as a fight, and it turned out to be like a pie facing and screaming and yelling. So we don't know enough yet to verify that information, but some sort of physical altercation happened in the back. One of the talent was sent home and one of them wasn't. Now, I know that a lot of fans are looking at this from a fairness perspective, but the reason why I wanted to talk to you about this is because you have experience being in a locker room. You have experience with talent who may not be each other's best friends and may be frustrated with each other. So I wanted your perspective on this because as a booker and as the owner, the optics, that word again, the optics of the situation was that he sent Andrade home and he didn't send Sammy home. So is he playing favored nations, or is there a reason? Did what Andrade did, is that just way worse than what Sammy did? We know Sammy's been in a lot of these things recently. And, you know, the other thing about it is this is show business.
Yeah.
And so fairness doesn't really exist. These all are not guys playing on the same team, you know, playing on the football team. Though, if this was football, there's a favored nations thing in all team sports as well. Like, you don't treat necessarily everybody the same. So when you heard about this scenario and you saw that one of the talent got sent home and one of them stayed, like, well, what were you thinking? What were your thoughts about how this may have possibly broken down?
When I heard that Andrade got sent home but Sammy didn't, well, first, Sammy's in the main event, and I think what happened was Andrade was the aggressor here. Andrade probably showed up the building, went searching for Sammy,
looking for a fight.
So I think that's the reason why. And when they, you know, because he was instigating the fight, right? But how does this even happen? First of all, Tony, once you see this on Twitter, right, it's out there for everyone to see. And we know Tony's on Twitter, right, all day.
Yeah, tweeting just during the show.
Tweet these motherfuckers and be like, listen, when you get to that building, don't go to the locker room. Go straight to my office. I'll be waiting for both of you guys.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about this, right? And then have a discussion. And if there's still issues, like, separate these guys, right? Like, this should never happen. Like, as soon as Andrade got there, he should have been escorted to Tony's office, right? That's where his liaisons come to play, right? You know, go see Tony. Tony wants to talk to you. Sammy should be there. Talk it out. Get it over. Then maybe thing is talk it out and get it over that way. If they can't, fine. Go to your side of your locker room. Go to your side of your locker room. Don't do anything. You know, like. But what happened here? He just showed up, and mm-hmm. I don't know exactly, but I can just imagine like he showed up and went to the locker room and was looking for Sammy and just started jaw jacking, and people started shoving people and everything. And I think he sent him home, Andrade home. I think Andrade wants to go home. I think he's trying to do anything he can to go home, and also hopefully to the WWE where his wife still works. And I don't think he's happy. Like obviously he's been tweeting stuff for a while. I saw that one. I don't think I follow him, but I saw the one where he says 30 seconds. Like he's upset. He's only on screen for 3 seconds and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So yeah, he wasn't happy in the WWE, but you can understand because you know Vince didn't get him. Triple H does, and yeah. Triple H used him really well in NXT. He was one of your favorite guys in NXT.
I loved him.
Me too. I thought he was great with the whole package of Selena Vega. Mm-hmm. I still think they messed up, and when they had the King of the Ring stuff, instead of putting on Baron Corbin and have him be like this, you know, goofy king, I still would have put it on Andrade and hooked him up with Charlotte, the king and queen, mm-hmm. right? I think that would have been perfect act together like that. So, yeah, I just think Andrade was the aggressor here, is how I'm reading this, and he got sent home because of it. Sammy, even though he was, you know, talking trash on Twitter, you know, he wasn't the aggressor here, and mm-hmm. all the blame's on Andrade. Yeah. So. I mean, I never had this issue ever. Like, I know there's people in the locker room that didn't like each other, but nothing really got too out of hand or anything like that other than some trash talking. I know some of the boys didn't like me. It's not in Premiere, but when I was doing All Pro Wrestling, but
because you made them lose, man.
Yeah. Premiere is a whole different story. If there was anyone upset with me, there's probably the underneath guys, and that's okay. The underneath guys are always going to be upset. But anyways, I think Tony made the right call here, and then, you know, when it's sending Andrade home and not Sammy.
So outside looking. And this is not us saying that we know exactly what happened, but just kind of the play that was made there seems like, you know, that there was a situation where one of the two guys was probably a little bit more of the aggressor than the other. There is something, though, to Sammy kind of always being involved in this stuff somebody needs to chill him out, because he's got such a great future that, you know, his reputation right now is kind of, you know, you heard that crowd.
Yeah.
You know, that crowd was turning on this dude, which, you know, and he's to him, he's probably like, oh, I'm a heel. This is good. But no, it's not good, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, now, that being said, would you have changed the finish and had Jericho go over?
No, because they're building something with Daniel first with Guevara. I think that's fine.
Okay,
that he went over
because that was the other one that people were saying, and no. I sort of get that one a little bit more. But okay, so from my perspective, now I have not been. The leader of a locker room. I've not been an owner. I've not been a booker, but I have been a coach of young kids and high school kids and even adults. When it came to you know, I played semi pro baseball up into my very early 30s, and you don't treat everybody the same. And I know that that's kind of like a armed forces kind of thing, where like everybody is sort of treated the same and you're expected to do everything and do your, mm-hmm. you know, but there's a psychology to dealing with personalities, and some kids are a little more sensitive. And so you have to figure out ways to get them to do things where you can't get mad at them or you can't yell at them, because that affects them. There are other kids who they need that. They need you to yell at them in order to inspire them to play harder or whatever, to coach them. And so I don't know the difference between a Sammy's personality and an Andrade's personality, because I don't know either guy. I've never met either guy. I only see what we see on television or what we see in social media. But when it comes to Tony, his show, what he is putting out there, his booking plans, what he wants to do, he's had to change plans so many times of late to where it's got to be, you know, it's got to be turning his hair gray, you know, with all the injuries, with all the shenanigans that have been happening with the CM Punk thing. And so if you're like, hey, I know clearly who was the person who probably really started this, I don't have to play this fairness game. Like, I need Sammy in this main event. We've been building this thing up for a whole week. Now, some fans may say, well, you know, it wasn't like it was great or anything, but that's not the point. Is he's putting together a television show that he's been working on, you know, for the last week, and he's got this storyline that he wants to do. So it's not an injury. It's not COVID. No one's sick. It's two guys who have conflict, and one of them may have overstepped the boundaries more than the other. So thus, Sammy, you're on television. You have a job to do. We need you to have this match. We need you to do your job. You're going to be involved in this match. We got big plans for this thing, and I'm not changing. So from that perspective, I get it. And again, like I said, this is show business. This isn't like, you know, fair play for, you know, all, you know, the what's the line? All is fair in love and war or whatever, you know, like you don't have to play by some sort of moral rules in this game because they're trying to draw TV viewers. They're trying to draw an audience. They're trying to get back on their feet after being so hot, you know, a year ago and even less than a year ago. And now they're not, and they're trying to figure out where to go. So from that perspective, I think Tony has every right to decide, you know, because a lot of people are saying, oh, it's so embarrassing that Sammy's on TV. You know, Tony needs to put his foot down. I think he put his foot down. He said, this dude was the one. Now let's move on. I got a show to book. We as a company have a show to produce. Let's keep it moving. So from that perspective, I get it.
And let's be honest, Sammy's figured into some future stuff. Andrade's obviously not, you know. Well, he's been doing zilch. So
and if Andrade wasn't showing frustration in that same way, and maybe he was, you know, doing things a little bit more from a cohesive standpoint, then maybe, you know, maybe Tony figures out a different thing rather than sending him home or whatever happened. And you know, there's a lot of stuff in here where you can't just look at this from a black and white scenario and go, this, you know, this means this and both got, like, it's not, it's complete, it's everything is gray. And for people to look at this and think there's a fairness perspective here, like, that's just not how things work.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's at fault here, but like I said, Tony could have nipped this in the butt early on before this all happened, you know, if he would have just called that meeting beforehand. And but also at the same time, like, it sounds like for me looking at it the outside that Andrade was probably the aggressor and he didn't be sent home, and Sammy was in the main event that they've advertised, and Andrade was what, just in a loser leaves town match?
Well, it was a Rampage match, and honestly. Yeah.
No one cared.
I think sending Andrade home is actually to his benefit, because that match, poorly booked.
Yeah.
Who knows what was going to happen? I'm just like, my God, why are we having this match? I almost feel like Andrade's probably relieved that he didn't have to have that match, because it was just not very well booked. It didn't make any sense. Like, I understand the storyline. Like, there's, you know, the little storyline that they have, but nobody cares.
No one cares. Yeah. Because no one ever cared about 10.
No.
So who cares? You're going to lose that mask. And no one cares about Andrade because he hasn't done anything since he's really arrived. There hasn't been anything of, like, what, a little feud with Darby and Sting. It wasn't even that big a deal. So that's all he's done. Yeah. And, you know, it's probably a good idea where you're on vacation next week too. I was thinking about this. You're on vacation next week. You got an interview with Larry Dallas going on. You know, AEW is taking a hiatus. It's been ROH the last few weeks.
Yeah, you don't even have to watch next week if
you
don't want to.
Yeah, yeah. Next week is ROH again. You know, we'll come back on the 18th when it's All Elite Wrestling again.
Yeah.
With Jon Moxley defending the title against Hangman Adam Page.
Yeah.
Does it feel like an ROH show? Like, ROH is dominant in almost every segment, it felt like, mostly?
I wonder if it was originally booked that way, or if Tony's like, man, we need to, like, have some baby faces do stuff because, you know, all the chaos going on. And then the heel goes over in the end, which we'll get to here in a second because we're going to talk about this overrun. I felt exactly the same as you, which is, okay, AEW's a two-hour show. They have been telling us that we're going to get an extra, I don't know if they said 15 minutes, maybe they did, but we just knew, we know what an overrun is because we've been watching, we watched the Monday Night Wars.
So he, Tony Khan tweeted it out like a couple days ago that, hey, they're giving, you know, we got an extra 15 minutes and this is going to be a for the anniversary and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, he was saying it's going to be an extra 15.
So in my pro wrestling marketing mind, I thought, okay, either he's got a little plan up his sleeve, like maybe the Bucks and Omega can come back and show up. Maybe he's got an ending to this show that is going to be like this really great cliffhanger that makes you want to tune into Rampage. Maybe he's got this big angle that's going to set up next week's TV on Dynamite, and coming out of this show, that extra 15 minutes meant something. And I tweeted this out during the show. I didn't, this wasn't after the show. I said, what do we think of the extended edition of AEW Dynamite? And I give two options. One, I like the extra Dynamite. And two, 2 hours should be enough.
Yeah.
It was almost split 50-50. And I am not saying that I hated the extra 15 minutes. And I'll tell you why. There were two segments on this show that if they didn't have the 15 minutes, they would have gotten cut. One of those was the National Scissoring Day. Now, some people think that that went too long, and I can very much see that. But what I thought was unique about that segment is Bowens he's a fan favorite now, right? Max Caster is a fan favorite right now. But we are still sort of learning who these guys are. We're still figuring out their personalities. This was the first time they had the opportunity on that stage, on that platform, on that TV show to give us more than their wrestling and the rap interview.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I really, really like that. Now, did we need the Mark Sterling thing? I almost was like, they're killing this thing by putting this dude on TV. But what it was they're trying to get over this scissor leg drop from the top rope as like somebody called, I think it was Kevin Ely called the new Dudley's was up.
Yeah. And of course they had to get the rock, paper, scissors joke in there.
Right. That was cute. I didn't hate it, but yeah.
I don't mind, we'll talk about it when we get there. But yeah.
So from that perspective, I understand why they wanted to give these guys a shot. And if this show was only 2 hours, I'm guessing that segment gets cut down a little bit. The idea of it gets cut down. The second one was this women's tag team match, which on paper, I was kind of like, huh, gosh, I really hope that this is not a bad match. And in this match, the crowd was into just about every single woman. And I know it wasn't set up for this. The whole segment was set up for Paige to be seen as like this person who people cannot wait to see wrestle. But in fact, Willow, Jamie Hayter, Serena Deeb, all way more over with this crowd than Paige, who finally threw some punches. So I don't think it worked out exactly the way that they wanted. But I think that segment also gets cut. It was a nice opportunity for Willow to get something, which I don't really like what they set up after that. But I think those two segments get cut without this extra breathing time for the show. And if we would have got that cliffhanger or that surprise, I'd have been like, beautiful, because you let the show breathe a little bit more than usual and you hit a home run in that last overrun. One of those things, one out of those two things happened, and they did not hit a home run with the overrun because I think most people, now I'm not saying everybody, now maybe it's just those of us who were watching the Monday Night War at live. I heard from so many people who were expecting something to happen and were deflated when the heels cheated and Jericho got his hand raised at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the way Tony's put it, I thought something was going to happen. And I can see what people were thinking. But there's ways that they didn't need this overrun. There's a couple of matches, honestly, they could have trimmed time off of, including the scissor National Scissor Day segment. They could have definitely cut that down too with the Mark Sterling stuff didn't need to be done. But a couple of matches, and we'll talk about it when we start going through the matches. But yeah, they could have fit this show in 2 hours. There's no need. I mean, the overrun was just the match went on at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think you use the, if it's 15 extra minutes they give you or you get, man, like use that when it, the Hangman and Page versus Moxley match. Like mm-hmm. they're giving a, they're, you know, this could go on these two of our top guys. You know, we're given, you know, extra 15 minutes to this because you, we don't, you know, we want to make sure this, the whole match gets into the, on the show, right? You know, something like that.
Where's our guy JR, by the way?
He's on Rampage.
So he's only doing Rampage now?
He did last Rampage last week. I heard him for the first like 10 minutes before I turned it off. I can't get through that damn show.
Yeah, you know? It's tough. It's definitely
and even
tough.
Even what's advertised on this week's Rampage and Battle of the Belts, and I'm just like, no, it doesn't feel like a show, must see show.
Yeah, that's another thing, and we'll get to the card of Battle of the Belts, but man. And
SmackDown has Roman coming back.
Yeah, just like
Hunter versus Sheamus 2 coming off their, you know, highly rated match that they had at the event in September. So,
but we have Pac and Trent Beretta in a main event, man.
Trent, man, that guy, what a waste of potential, man. He just.
Okay, so let's start the show review here. MJF and Wheeler Yuta. This dude, MJF, not only does he have the presence with the microphone in his hand, but his presence during the match now, it just is bigger than anything else that I thought was on this TV show, and that's including Jon Moxley and Adam Page.
Yeah, he felt like the biggest star of the show, for sure.
I don't know if it's like, is he a little bit bigger? Is he a little bit more cut? But I don't, when he came down, I was like, wow, this guy. And I thought they had a pretty good match. I thought it was paced very well. And again, maybe leaning towards, if this was only a 2-hour show, maybe they're like going boom, 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 boom. But I liked this match a lot. Not only was the presence there, but they had some nice little near falls sprinkled in here. Wheeler did a dive off the top rope, a big splash that MJF was like, oh, I don't know if he's gonna make it, and he's like almost gonna scoot and like move his arms to catch the guy. But that was a nice that was a nice match with a nice little near fall, and you know, MJF wins by submission. I don't know how I felt about the end of this, but was there a handshake in the at the end of this?
Yuta wanted a handshake from MJF, but before it looked like MJF was going to do it, and then Lee Moriarty, Cisco, attacked Yuta from behind, and then Stokely came out with an apple and had the ring, and he wanted MJF to crack Yuta with the ring. And did we just establish that a couple weeks ago? That MJF hired these guys, and he's the boss. Why is Stokely boss around MJF at this point? Why are we going through this right now? It seems so out of place.
The way that I saw it was Stoke Dog is a little eager. Like, he's like, oh, you know, MJF doesn't know that he doesn't need us. But if he was, you know, he's wrestling, so he can't really be thinking. So I'm going to make this decision for him. And at some point, there's going to be, you know, a little bit of conflict there, I think. Mm-hmm. But the Lee Moriarty thing was funny, because at first I was like, wait, this is a new guy? Is this like a debuting guy? And then I was like, oh no, now I remember he changed hair color.
Yeah.
Okay, so then what did you think about Regal coming out with the Nux and kind of challenging MJF, and then MJF had to stand down?
I didn't like that either. I thought this whole thing took away from MJF. I mean, they might be teasing something where MJF, you know, does something physical to Regal leading into the...
Yeah, it definitely feels like that's going to happen at some point.
And I think you could do something and set something up down the line. You still have, a good amount of time for the next pay-per-view, right? Because I think the next pay-per-view is towards the end of November. Is it towards the end of November or early November?
Mid-November, I think.
Mid-November. Okay, you still got a few weeks to do something there. I thought this match was a good match, but this match, how they did it, should have happened after MJF wins the championship.
If that's the case.
Because MJF, I think this match, I thought it should have played off last week, the brawl, you know, the trash talking, the brawl in the suite. I'm not saying jumpstart this match, but you would want you to be aggressive, wanting to get MJF like right away. MJF could have done some of the Sabisco stalling, could have got out, took a couple powders, really frustrated, get the young kid upset. And then finally things break down. It's more of a faster pace, more of a fight than a wrestling match. And I think MJF should have won by not cheating, taking advantage of the young, aggressive Yuta and winning a shorter match. And then Yuta could go on this journey of like, I got fooled. That should never happened to me, right? And then you kind of start building up Yuta has like a chip on his shoulder from this loss to MJF. Now he goes on. Now he's starting to be more aggressive in his matches. He's going on a win streak and he's winning matches on television. And then you see when MJF wins the belt, Yuta could be, because he's been winning matches and winning some, hopefully some people that can give him some credibility with these wins. He can be back to now the guy you beat MJF back in Washington is not the same kid anymore. I'm different. I'm more focused. You're not gonna, you know, and then they have this match.
Okay, but you know what the storyline was, and MJF told this storyline much better on Twitter than I think they told us last week. These guys kind of came up together, right? Like they were sharing hotels, or you know, or not maybe not sharing rooms, but like. MJF had a tweet saying that, you know, Wheeler Yuta is like such a crazy guy or whatever. Like he came over to his room one time with very little clothes on, forcing MJF to watch Viscera matches, or he said something like that. Right. And so the idea should have been, I think we should have been hit over the head a little bit more in that both of these guys kind of came through at the same time. But MJF is such a prodigy that he's just at that level that Wheeler Yuta wants to get to. And so he's got to test himself against this guy. And so I think that's the story that the match told, but I don't know that we would have known that necessarily through Dynamite. And I might be reading a little bit more into the tweets, but that's kind of what I got out of the whole story. And that's why I kind of liked the match, because a lot of it was like Wheeler, you know, he's testing himself, like he's trying to see if he can hang with the big dogs, and you know, MJF is one of the, you know, biggest dogs going right now. So that's why I think I probably like this a little bit better than you.
I just thought, you know, MJF, if you know, all roads point to MJF and Moxley, right? Most likely at the pay-per-view, Moxley of course has been booked as this, you know, very nasty champion. He'll do anything to retain a title. He gets violent in there. Like, I think you need to give MJF something, you know, and I think him in his first match, I think he should have beat Yuta. It should have gone this long, shouldn't have been that much back and forth with a bunch of, you know, near falls and all that stuff. I think it should have been a lot shorter, aggressive, and MJF on top. You know, cheating, but also still, you know, pinning him with a finish or something like that, or a submission. You know, some kind of taking advantage of the young kid. That's what I think should have happened. And, you know, the build up MJF versus Mox, I think, you know, MJF needs something like that, you know, going into that match. So.
All right, there was a Jericho ROH video package, and then that led to Jericho and the Jericho Appreciation Society telling Daniel Garcia that they taught him every trick that he knows. And my favorite part of this interview is who's wearing the Daniel Garcia bucket hat that he threw down? None other than Jake Hager in the back. Kissing up to Jericho a little bit.
So,
I mean, that's really all we saw. We saw them again in the main event, but they 2.0 gets a chance to talk and stuff. So Jay Lethal versus Darby Allin. I thought this was another solid match, and it made me think that, you know, in sports, in team sports, there's the idea of a glue guy. The glue guy kind of keeps things together. He's reliable. He's trustworthy. You don't got to worry about the glue guy. Jay Lethal's like the glue guy for this company, I think. He never is in a bad match. He's always, you know, in his whatever his role is, which in this match it was to lose to Darby in a really good match. The guy just plays his role perfectly, and so every time he wrestles on TV, now there is a style of a TV match that I like that sometimes AEW goes overboard in, which is like, I want my pay-per-views to be like the payoff to some of these matches, and those are where the long matches can be and where the multiple kickouts and the back and forth and the drama. And sometimes when I'm watching these TV matches, I'm like, they're trying to do like a pay-per-view match, and then I got to watch the little box and I can't hear the commentators, and then I just lose interest, right? And so when I watch Jay Lethal, I sort of feel like he is able to do both styles really well. Like if he needs to do that 20-minute pay-per-view match, he's got that style down. And he's also got this TV style match down, because whenever I watch a Jay Lethal match on Dynamite, I never get to the point where I'm like, okay, when is the finish coming? Like, can we get this thing over with? So I think there's some value in that, because I don't feel that way about all Dynamite TV matches. This show I thought was pretty good when it came to that, but there's some where I'm just like, man, like these matches are just going through commercials, and you say it all the time, you know, almost for no reason sometimes.
Yeah.
So after Darby wins with what is that pin called?
It looks like to me it's the full leg lock, but the Gibson leg lock. Excuse me, full leg lock. It's a different move. Gibson leg lock, but I don't know what he calls it. But I like that move.
Yeah, it's a nice thing, a nice little pin. It looks like it's really hard to get out of, so it actually looks like a real pin.
Mm-hmm.
So right before that happens, Sanjay comes out with Satnam Singh on the ramp. Did you notice that how like short that ramp was in that building?
Yeah, that place was small. Looked like there's no one on the top deck. I don't know what the attendance was, but it didn't look like
it wasn't that great. Big of a crowd. I saw numbers in the Observer on Friday, and it wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lethal was like, nah, I got this, guys. Like, I don't need you. Then he lost. And then Darby was getting in his grill, like, shake my hand. Don't listen to those guys. And finally, Lethal did shake his hand. And then Lethal did go with his crew. But there's something stewing there, something going on. But ultimately, I thought, you know, Darby kind of gets lost sometimes, and I think it's, you know, he's with Sting, so he's kind of in important things, but I do like him as a single. I want to see some of these young guys get over as a single and be in these important matches, and hopefully Darby gets back to that level, because, you know, he's got something. He's got a ton of charisma. I just don't want to see him lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I really like Darby, and he's one of my favorites to watch in AEW. He's so good. This match was really good. I really liked this match until Sanjay Dutt and Satnam came out. I thought that they brought the match to a halt, and I don't know. It just, like, I felt like they didn't need that. I think Darby should have won. Lethal, they could have done the handshakes thing, you know, Lethal. And then you followed up next week with a promo with Sanjay, Lethal, and Satnam, and Sanjay could be like, I told you, you needed us.
Yeah.
You know, you decided to do it on your own, and you lost. I told you, with us there, you wouldn't have lost, right? And then that could have, like, you know, kept teasing some tension between there. And Jay Lethal's so good, man. Yeah. I wanted to see him do more. He should have done more coming in, honestly. Instead of losing right away, like Tony does all these guys. He gets these guys. They come in, they lose right away. It's almost the same thing that we complain about when it came to NXT call-ups.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you got these guys, this great young horse that's gonna is favored to win this race. He's one of the youngest horses. He's and it's like, let's just shoot him in the leg and let him see how he goes, right? And that's what I feel like this happens in AEW too. Lethal comes out, shows up, loses. Rush shows up, loses, loses again on this show. You know, a lot of guys like that, and it's just, you know, Bandido, right?
Yeah, who supposedly they signed.
They signed, and now they're gonna we're gonna build him up now, and he's just gonna be the guy in the middle, like I said on our Facebook group. I'm sorry, people think he's this big star. I saw him a lot in ROH. His rise up, his championship win, and when he won the title, it was very clear that he's an exciting guy in the middle. And I think that's what's going to happen here in AEW with Bandido. But this match I thought was really good. I was really liking it. And I wasn't a big fan of the finish. I thought they could have left all that stuff out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Time-wise, I wouldn't mess with this match time. I thought it was the best wrestled professional wrestling match on the show for sure.
And then we had the Brian Cage video package with his crew, with Gates of Agony and what's the guy's name? Prince Nana. Prince Nana. So Brian Cage and Wardlow, I'm going to give Jason Robar, who's in our fight game group as well. He said, "Oh, it's a cruiserweight match."
Yeah.
And so it was these two giant humans doing a lot of high-flying spots, a lot of dives and jumps and flying stuff, and big guys doing crazy moves. And there is definitely a fan base for that. And I think a lot of the fan base, the people who really love that, it's kind of, you know, AEW is kind of built on it, right? That indie crowd who loves to see this stuff. Wardlow even does his ode to Jeff Hardy in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Wardlow finally wins with 4 power bombs. A competitive match for Brian Cage, probably something that he needs if he's going to be involved. Because I was kind of wondering if this was going to be a semi squash, but they had a plan. Brian Cage and the Gates of Agony attacked Wardlow after Wardlow beat him with 4 power bombs. He didn't really sell those 4 power bombs for very long. No. Samoa Joe came in to kind of help, but then he gets beat up. And guys we haven't seen in quite a while come out to make the save. It is FTR. I don't know if they're setting up some sort of 8-man, but the...
No,
the
tag team...
You're right. It's for Is it Battle Belts?
Battle Belts, the tag team titles. ROH tag team titles.
Against the Gates of Agony. Have we ever seen the Gates of Agony have a match on AEW before?
No.
Yeah.
So this big group in ROH is going to lose on Dynamite and also lose on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine they beat FTR. That'd be freaking ridiculous, but
so you never know. Thoughts on Brian Cage here?
This is a match that should have been shorter. I should have been compacted into one segment. It should have been a high impact, two big dudes doing stuff. And then, you know, I think Wardlow should have went convincing. Wardlow... He comes out, he's not getting the same reactions he did a few months ago. This crowd was like, yay, Wardlow, not just going crazy when he would come out before, mm-hmm. right? It was, you want to build Wardlow back to that. So give him a big win, just over Brian Cage, a convincing win. Boom, let's get him back going again, right? And like you said, he hits the 4 power bombs on Cage, and Cage is up and fine and attacking him quickly after the match. It just killed that. I watched live. I watched the whole, you know, commercial breaks and the picture in picture, and I'm watching the match through picture in picture. And Brian Cage is just a one trick pony,
mm-hmm.
big guy who could do some athletic stuff. But he's a guy that's just, you know, on the indies, he stands out because he's on your show once and you don't see him for another few months, right? But he's just exposed on television. He's exposed when he started in AEW. And then he's just not a good worker. and I'm watching his heat he's given to Wardlow during the break, and it's just so indie. And so it's like, God, he's still so green. He's still a green guy. He's been doing it for a long time, but he's green. Green's not length of years in wrestling. You know, it's just, you know, experience in there. And he just doesn't understand being a heel. He knows how to do his flashy stuff. He knows how to do all that. And he's a standout when he's on offense, but he doesn't understand giving a guy heat. It was boring. When they came back from commercial break, you could hear a pin drop in the audience. He's sucking the life out of his audience, you know, with this heat. And they only got up when Wardlow did that, was that Willow and the Wisp deal off the rope? So to me, forget Brian Cage, get Wardlow back up and running and have him destroy, you know, Brian. I'm not saying go out, you know, have a little bit of a match, do some power shit, do some athletic stuff for both men real quick, but then have Wardlow just finally end it and end it one segment. I'm not a big fan of this Wardlow thing. Wardlow's involved in the stupidest thing. Wardlow's world, Wardlow. I'm watching Joe come out there and throw those fiery punches, man. God, it looks so awesome. And I'm thinking, like, why is this guy an RH TV champion? Why he's not just in the mix doing other things, you know? Anyways, this was a match just like Yuta and MJF. I think you could have cut it down shorter. You didn't need a 15-minute overrun, and you could have fit that main event match within 2 hours on the show.
All right, we had a Brit interview, and she says Saraya can't wrestle, so it's still Brit's house. There was a lot of houses on this show. There was Swerve's house, Daddy Ass's house, and Brit's house, and Saraya's house. So yeah, a lot of houses. This is not a house I would have claimed, though. Not with the small building. Claim Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Yeah.
So Penelope Ford, Serena Deeb, Jamie Hayter with Britt Baker by their side versus Toni Storm, Willow, and Ember. I always want to call her Ember Moon. Athena with Saraya by their side. And the crowd is really into this match. They were fired up pretty much for all of the women. I thought it's interesting because Jamie Hayter gets some of the best babyface spots, even though she's on the heel team. And she plays them up. And, you know, whenever they're going to pull that trigger on her, I think it's going to be good. I just hope that they haven't missed the peak with it. And I felt, and to me, I thought this match was well designed, because by the end of it, I think at least the people, I think the people wanted two things to happen. They either wanted Jamie Hayter to get a win, or they wanted Willow to get the win. And so I think you couldn't have gone wrong with either. I'm glad that it wasn't Jamie Hayter, if the idea was the person's going to then face Jade, because you know, she's going to have to lose. And then so she wins, Willow with the Doctor Bomb on Penelope. I wonder if they sort of knew, it's like if you could Monday morning quarterback thing, I would have not had the Paige thing. I would just let Willow celebrate in the ring, because that was actually what the people were excited about. They're like, oh yeah, we like her. She's an underdog. She got a win. That's meaningful. She got over. But then they had to do the thing with Paige. So Saraya gets involved with Britt, and she actually throws some hands. Rebel is in the ring, and she begs off, and she goes down to a knee, and Saraya kicks her.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd was like, it's okay. We wanted Willow and Jamie Hayter more than Saraya. Yeah. So that's actually a bad thing to me, because, you know, they're building this whole thing where Saraya, you know, if she ever gets to have a match again, and they're building this thing with her and Britt, and this particular crowd was like, this is all right.
Yeah, they're building to Saraya versus Britt Baker, and no one really cares about that. They just want to see Jamie Hayter beat Toni Storm for the title.
Or Jamie Hayter turn on Britt. That's the other thing they want
to see. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could all lead. I still think my original plan was better with, at the pay-per-view, Jamie Hayter wins the title, and like she's a champ, and now Britt has to play second to her.
Yeah.
And Britt is all about Britt, and she can't handle it, and, you know, And she, you know, that's how you do the turn and everything. Because Jamie Hayter's getting so popular. But you're right; they might miss it. They might miss the.
I hope not.
Look at this. The match was fine. I don't see anything. It kind of broke down in like everyone starts hitting their finisher, you know, that kind of, or a big move and that kind of deal.
See, but the sort of what I was saying when it comes to a TV match. Like the whole idea of this match was so the wrestlers got over to the crowd, and I'm fine with that. Even if like it's not like this great wrestling match, and maybe there are the predictable spots. Like WWE, you know, you could go back years. The one match that would always get over with the crowd was like the main event 8-man tag. or 10-man tag. And the reason is because their characters were so hot, they couldn't wait for Scotty Too Hotty to do the stupid worm, right? Like, they're just waiting to pop for something like that. And if we go back and watch those matches are still pretty well done because those guys have great timing and the camera work is fantastic. But here, like, I like this as a TV match because the idea is to get these people over, and it worked. Great. Like, the wrestling didn't have to be perfect for me, and, you know, the predictable spots.
The wrestling is fine.
But it's just the idea that, wow, maybe we made somebody here. Maybe there's somebody who's going to be elevated, but then they're going to ruin it by serving her to Jade, which is
it's all frustrating. Yeah, Willow didn't. I mean, she got over for a night, maybe, and then that's it, right? But I like
and her promo almost killed the whole thing. So.
Oh.
We'll get to that in a second.
That sound like just a rehearsed scripted. I mean, there's a couple of them.
On this. It was bad. Yeah. They're both women's segments with the interviews were really bad, but the match was good, and I was happy about that. But the two women's interview segments were pretty bad.
Yeah.
All right. Tony Schiavone with Roosh and Private Party taped earlier in the evening. And it was just more contract tampering nonsense. Who knows where they're going? Like, when we know that this kind of stuff is really a big deal and it's frustrating people and it's kind of a headache for Tony, like, can't we just say, okay, like, let's stop doing this stuff? Like, maybe it's creating more drama than, you know, it's playing into the drama and these people think, oh, maybe I can do this stuff on Twitter.
This is just Tony getting his frustration out, you know, just... being a baby, but you know, it's not good television at all.
No, not at all. All right, then we had the National Scissoring Day. The Acclaimed come out. Max Caster cuts a promo, cuts a joke on old Joey B, Joe Biden, that the crowd liked. And so Bowens was saying how, you know, how Babe Ruth, they used to call Babe Ruth the Sultan of SWAT. He is the Sultan of Scissor. Billy Gunn, when he cut his promo, he decided to steal The Rock's millions and millions.
Yeah, so once again, reminding fans, bigger stars, bigger company. Who
you know, I don't imagine he's going to be on Raw next week because they're doing the whole DX thing.
No, he can't.
The DX reunion. So
I would be shocked.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he's going, but that Triple H and Road Dogg and X-Pac are going to make a giant joke about the person who's missing, right?
Oh, wait, there'll be that blow-up doll they had in that Raw review we just reviewed on our Patreon. Right? Road Dogg had that blow-up doll of Billy Gunn?
Okay, do you think now, this is out there, right? This is if you're Triple H and Shawn Michaels and you want to say, this scissoring thing is really stupid, guys, do you let the 50-year-old dudes do the scissoring? Or is that saying, this is actually cool? Because I kind of wonder how they can make a joke about the scissoring thing.
I'm guessing they're going to do it. But it'd be cool if they just acknowledge him and treat it, you know. We'll see. We'll see what they do.
Yeah.
You know, because if they're smart and Triple H has been doing a good job pushing most of the right buttons, he can be like, you know, let's just show these people we're not the evil empire here.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just, you know, give a shout out to Billy Gunn.
Yeah,
and
wish you were here.
Yeah, people be like, oh, man, yeah, I told you. Yeah, it's changed, you know. Yeah,
that's actually the smart way. You're 100% right.
That would be my advice if they were going to talk to me about the produce that segment.
Yeah, Tony Khan did an interview with Ariel. I didn't hear the interview, but Josh Nason, he listened to it, or he watched it, and he did the whole write-up. And there's a comment in there about Tony Khan saying something to the effect of that Triple H and Stephanie were his friends, or at least he thought they were his friends, when he was just a football owner.
Come on, man. It's all smooching rich people, dude. Come on, man. It's like I see people, like, when they deal with wrestlers, they're like, oh, but this guy is so nice.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. He wants to get pushed. He wants to get paid. He wants a job. Like, of course they're going to be so nice. Like, they're all nice, you know, when they want to get booked and they want to be used, you know, on top, you know. Yeah. Shit. You just got to understand to get through the bullshit. And
so what do you think popped me the most in this whole segment?
I don't know. Can't tell you. I thought it was a good segment, though. I liked it. Other than the Sterling came out.
Smart Mark.
Yeah.
When Billy Gunn did the rockabilly pose.
Oh, I saw that. I gotta chuckle at that as well.
Oh man, that was so good.
He was shouting out our 1997 Raw review. Yeah. That's what
sometimes you get a payoff for watching wrestling for a long time, and that was
yeah. No one reacted to it but us. But
exactly. Yeah. The Acclaimed, you know, they were about to do a good deed here. You know, it's not about the division in our country. We're gonna bring everybody together. By doing this scissoring thing, and, you know, the Acclaimed is all about bringing people together rather than having the division in Washington, D.C. And so then Swerve interrupts them, and he said Rock beats Scissors. He had a rock in his hand, and they're setting up a match with him and Billy Gunn for next week. And this is when Mark Sterling came out. Almost ruined the whole damn thing. He wanted the three of them to scissor him, and they beat him up, and he got the scissor leg drop from Bowens, which is he lays out, spreads his legs, Bowens drops a leg on his thigh too. They're going to screw that one up, and somebody's going to get really hurt. A little bit too close to the situation there.
Billy Gunn's like, listen, guys, this is what we're going to do. We got the Chuck and Billy deal, but we're legit in this case, right? We got credibility now. And then we're going to do this feels very DX-ish, babyface DX-ish in 98, right? With what we're doing.
I mean, this, technically the scissor is just an X, right?
Yeah, it's just DX, the cross chop. And now we're going to take the WhatsApp, but now we're gonna call it the scissor. You know, like they're just combining stuff that was over before and just making a little twist on it. You know what? I really like
wrestling
this.
It's all wrestling is. You just know what works and you put your little wiggle on it, and if it gets over, then you keep doing it.
This might surprise a lot of listeners out there, but I really like this until the Mark Sterling part.
Yeah, everything I thought it was great.
I really enjoyed this. It didn't feel long because I thought specifically Anthony Bowens did a great job.
That guy is so charismatic.
At first, you know, you think Caster's the star of the team.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think Bowens might have the even better upside. He's better in the ring, obviously. I just really liked how he carried himself in his promo, how he really kept this together. I did not feel like it was going along with him. I thought Caster, other than the raps he does, looked kind of nervous talking on the mic. He didn't feel comfortable out there. He's leaning over. He's hunching over. He's, you know, blinking a lot over here and there, you know.
Come on, dude. You're a handsome young man.
I know,
on top,
like,
of the world. Let's get, like, it together.
Yeah, and even like if you watch next time, watch Caster when it's Bowen talking and or Gunn talking. Like, he's very doesn't know how to be, right? But I'm really into it. I think it's fun. I think it's the scissoring stuff is like I said, fun. And I'm with it. I'm happy for these guys. I really am. And I thought Swerve was great. Just his presence, how he walked out and how he carried himself and his look. I'm like, oh, this is good. I liked the little rock, paper, scissors stuff, the rock stuff that he did. And I thought they should have closed it with Billy Gunn's response and also the big sister in the middle, yeah. right? No need for this Mark Sterling BS, man. Yeah, brought yeah. it down.
Yeah, I agree.
But I was a fan of the National Scissor Days.
You know what segment. This kind of reminded me of? Obviously, on a lower level, because wrestling is so much less popular on television than it was. This reminded me a lot of This Is Your Life Rock from Raw, just in the perspective of, you're just thinking, how the hell are they going to do this? This is so long. It can't still be this entertaining. There's nothing to this thing, but the personalities are so big and are so on fire that it actually does work. And I actually hope this is the best, that this has the best rating of any segment on TV. Because I thought, man, this is, you don't need to do this all the time. Yeah. But there wrestling can be fun, and this was really, really fun.
Yeah, I don't know what would be the best segment. I think MJF coming out would be that segment.
Yeah, that's usually the top segment anyways.
But I thought this was, I really like what they're doing here with these guys. You know, of course, everything has a shelf life.
Yes.
DX had a shelf life, right?
DX's shelf life is a lot shorter than what people realize, at least that first iteration of DX when Triple H turns heel, because he's like, these guys are holding me back, man.
Yeah. And people might think, well, they did the crotch off for years. No, I mean, they would do it because it was part of them, but you know, people are like, oh, happy to see it. But it wasn't like,
yeah, there was also like three or four different iterations of it.
It wasn't like me watching the Giants game with my dad and they show the picture of a skybox, a bunch of young kids, and they're all doing the freaking suck it, you know, crock chop. You know, they're done. My dad's like, what the hell are you doing that for? And I was like, I can't even explain it.
You know, you want to know maybe the best thing about Bowens?
Hmm.
Giants fan.
That's right. I like Bowens.
He was on Promise Thomas's podcast a while ago. Before he was this big. Giants fan, Barry Bonds fan. So
Promise Thomas gets
a lot of love for Bowens. But Promise Thomas has got the connections, man.
He has the pulse of the young talents.
Oh yeah.
Check it out. Left my wallet. Check out that adult. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to hear.
He may be on a little bit of a hiatus, but he's got a ton of episodes in his archive.
Oh, yeah.
You and I are on a bunch of them too. So
yep.
All right, Dark Order Death Triangle video package. They're going to have their match on Friday, which is the replacement for the Andrade and Ten match that is not happening now.
John Silver finally made me really laugh. When he did the old Pac impersonation, I thought that was pretty funny. I don't know. He just got me.
And then we had a segment that slowed the entire show to an absolute halt. Madison Rayne is with Sky Blue, and her look is different now, right? This is 2 weeks in a row where she doesn't really look like Sky Blue looked previously.
Because she wasn't in gear. She's not in gear last time. I mean, I think she doesn't have the makeup on and all that kind of stuff. And she looks like just like the young little kid that she is.
So Anna Jay and Ty Conti run in, Ty Mello, and they clown on the both of them. And, you know, they are sports entertainers. They are not professional wrestlers, and sports entertainers win every time. And so I couldn't believe that this happened. Poor Sky Blue admits that she doesn't have charisma.
Yeah.
Yep. And then she calls out their wrestling. What does that even mean?
Nice. All I saw was Sky Blue looking at the cue cards on the off camera. She kept looking over there. And unfortunately, she's looking at some. She never looked over there because they gave a lot of bullshit lines to say. And
the writing was really bad. But how many takes do you think this was? Because if this was like take one and they're like, yep, we got it. Like, what the hell? I hope this was like take 20 and they were like, okay, we're never going to get better than this.
If they had multiple takes, it definitely was the one that did. Because it's probably these segments that drive the producers nuts. Like, God, man, the guy get, you know, why can't they just, this is another waste of time. Whatever, even if it was like 30 seconds, whatever it was. Just announce this match.
I mean, they're trying to set something up for Rampage.
You don't need to do a segment, a backstage segment, set up everything on your television. Some matches just are fucking happening, you know?
Yeah.
God damn.
All right. Then we had.
It's like so frustrating. It's such a waste of time.
We had Roosh and Hangman. Someone had asked, you know, who would be the company guy? Like, who's the guy in AEW who's like the homegrown? He, you know, when you need somebody to depend on who's like AEW for life, like, who's that guy? And I thought Hangman, like, some people think Moxley's a lone, he's too much of a lone wolf kind of guy. Like, I mean, I'm sure Moxley is, you know, good in that locker room for them, but he's also just his personality is a little bit less of like a let's bring everybody together. It's more of like, you know, he takes care of his business. I thought, you know, I don't know if Hangman has the personality, but like he should be that guy because he's been there from the beginning. He's the young guy. Like Moxley sort of said it in this in this interview that comes after this match, of they're just kind of circling each other and stuff. So I thought you know that he would be a good choice. It can't be MJF because MJF is doing the storyline where he's teasing that he's going to leave and all this stuff. So I thought, you know, Hangman is probably a good person for that. For that role, like who's the? They kept saying, you know, who's the Tommy Dreamer of the AEW locker room, you know. So, I thought Hangman was a pretty good choice for that. But so Hangman wins this match with the Buckshot Lariat. He tried to get it at one point, got headbutted in the face. And where did Roosh cut himself? Was it on the headbutt?
Possibly, I couldn't tell. It happened so quickly. It looked like it bust his nose. Looked like maybe it was the headbutt.
Yeah. So after Hangman wins, Private Party like is circling Hangman, and then Mox shows up out of nowhere to even the odds, but I think the announcers tried to say like, oh, it's like 3-on-1 now. I was like, oh, I don't think it's 3-on-1. And then Mox grabs the mic and he says he's been waiting for this for 3 years. October 18th, there will be one last man standing at AEW, and Hangman wanted to go right there, but Mox said he'll let him live for another couple weeks there.
Yeah, the match was the match. It's a typical Roosh match. You know, he can brawl good, but then at times, but then it just breaks down to the chop fest. And you know, then you sign this guy, and he's been losing. He loses the Mox. He loses here. He's just not important. And he was a pretty big star in Mexico, right? Yeah. I wouldn't doubt we'll be in a few months seeing the Roosh being upset, you know, wanted to go somewhere else to suit himself because he's been used to being such a big star. And
yeah.
And then I thought this stuff with Moxley and Paige was going to be really good. I was waiting for Paige to really cut this, you know, passion promo. No, Mox just cut his balls off and walked out. Right?
I thought he was very complimentary to him by saying that, you know, they're the two big dogs left. But then, like, Hangman was like, okay, well, what about now? And then Mox was like, let's wait. And, like, there was, like, Hangman needed to do something to sort of save face there at the end, yeah, or get the big, you know, say something to the crowd or on the mic or, like, you know, well, okay, I can wait till October 18th and then I'm going to kick your ass or something. But he just, there was, like, nothing else.
It felt like I thought Mox was good in his promo, and it felt like, oh, man, this is going to be – but I was waiting for Paige to fire back, and he, you know, he did with that little, let's just do it now, and I thought, oh, shit, something's going to happen here. Okay, you know, and then he's like, nah, you know, you're not wasting my time. It's just how did Paige – is he just stupid and not thinking, like, I'm going to look like a total idiot in this segment? And I'm surprised Moxley, you know, didn't want his – you know, title challenge looked like an idiot too. I thought he should have had, hey, man, you're.
But I kind of think that some of that stuff was to, no, I think some of it was to kind of set it up for Hangman to kind of bow up and be like the tough guy, but it just didn't happen.
Well, if it happens next week, he cuts his passionate promo next week with, yeah, you're doing it now and Moxie's not here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is stupid.
All right.
Let's finish this up.
After we saw Willow kind of get over there with the crowd, she shows up with Tony Schiavone. She's so happy that she won. And then she decides she wants a shot at the TBS championship. And all of a sudden, Jade hears her name and steps out immediately And she's like, huh? You want me? I already beat you twice. And then Willow goes, well, you may have beat me twice, but how do you know you can beat me a third time? I was like,
yeah,
I was right. Like, it could either mean that she's got your number.
Mm-hmm.
See, the thing that she should have said, and this is another sports thing, which is, you know, sometimes announcers will say, oh, you know, it's really hard to beat a team twice in a row, or, you know, it's really hard to beat a team the third time because they're studying you. Like, she could have tried to go in that thing by saying, I learned or I found something in those matches and I learned and I'm going to give you a hell of a match or whatever. But the whole, how do you know you can beat me a third time? was not the way that I would. And I don't know, kind of like it was almost so bad that Jade is brought down a little bit by how bad that was. Like she didn't have any real comeback to it. It was just so awkward.
Plus it was noisy too. Like Layla and Kira are both yapping and they said they beat her twice. They also said they beat her tag matches and all this stuff. You know what? What happened to, weren't they building to Jade versus Nyla Rose?
I don't know.
Is that a pay-per-view match, I'm guessing, maybe?
Actually, I don't know.
So I thought they shot something on Rampage.
Oh,
I thought that was going to be the Battle of the Belts.
Possibly.
Match.
I possibly may have missed that.
Like, I still say you do that match, Nyla versus Jade, at Battle of the Belts, and just get that over with and have Jade win that. And maybe Willow wins here, crowd cheers her, she gets over, everyone's happy, everyone loves Willow, they want to root for Willow. And now, hey, Willow wins another match here. You know what? She beats Layla Gray. You know what? She beats Kira Hogan. Now, you know, now she's on a winning streak, and she's a different person than the person that Jade beat twice now, right?
Yeah.
And that part would be a more interesting pay-per-view match than a Nyla Rose versus Jade match.
Yeah. Well, what if she... Well, I'm not about beating Jade. I know people... I know people are like, I'm like, you're not going to beat Jade in a surprise match that had a two-day build.
Yeah.
You know, but if... there could come a time where Jade does a tag match and maybe she kind of gets, you know, rolled up or something in some way. But yeah, I just would not beat her really until you have somebody who's going to get something from beating her. Like, you know, obviously, like if a Sasha Banks came through, right? Like Sasha Banks could beat Jade in a debut match to make, you know, just that moment. But I don't see anybody on their current roster who should actually beat Jade.
Jamie Hayter at this point would probably be one to beat her.
I want to see Jamie beat Britt or beat Tony. I wouldn't see her beat Jade.
I say you just keep the belt. If you say you go with Jamie Hayter, let this all play out with Jamie Hayter. Hopefully she's still over enough. Hopefully when she has the AEW women's title at that point, and you keep Jade continue to be like maybe to 100-0 or something like that, or maybe a 99-0, and then it's title for title, and Jamie Hayter beats her then, you know, if she's still, you know, on fire then. So, you know, who knows? I mean, I still get confused. Honestly, Jade's the most over champion of the two women anyways at this point. Tony's like, she looked really good in that tag match. Like, you see how good she is? But she has, like, no life to her. She's just there. She's background.
Which is kind of insane because I thought her natural charisma was just through the charts when I first saw her.
Well, remember the stuff with Thunder Rosa and her as a team? She was one of them even talking. It was all Thunder Rosa talking.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So we had Luchasaurus and Fuego del Sol. This match was like, what, 30 seconds, maybe less?
Yeah.
And the whole thing was Jungle Boy came out. He was about to dump Fuego over the top rope after he beat him. Jungle Boy comes in with a chair. Hits him with a chair. Luchasaurus goes outside with Christian. Jungle Boy's in the ring. And he said Luchasaurus was his best friend. And by choosing Christian, he broke his heart.
Everyone laughed.
I was like, come on, bro.
Everyone laughed at
dude,
that
this
line.
Dude isn't yeah. your girlfriend. Like, I get he doesn't have to be the girlfriend, but it's not like he was his brother. It's not like, he's a dinosaur who can't talk. Like, what? Yeah. I guess maybe from the perspective of like your puppy, you know, just double cross you or something.
The Bucks are talking to Tony, which I always think they are. I think that the story of them like have no communication. I don't believe that story. I think there is communication with Tony, the Bucks, Omega. And I think during that conversation, they're like, you know what, Tony, we're not there. You need some CW drama. I think that would fit perfectly with the Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus storyline. So can you add a little CW, you know, drama, a little long stares and quiet moments, and you know, let them feel the pain on their faces.
What was the? I'm forgetting the name of the show that Luke Perry was on at the end. The Archie show.
Archie. Yeah. Fuck. What's that town called? Riverdale.
Riverdale.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like Jungle Boy's got to get on. Is that show still going?
I don't know. I know Jungle Boy made an appearance on Superstore in the background.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
True?
Yeah. Yeah. But that'd be great for him to like show up on one of those shows for like a cameo or like a little, you know, short story or something.
And Luchasaurus too.
Luchasaurus is already on Big Brother. I get to see enough of Luchasaurus on
Big Brother. Was he on Big Brother?
Like back in the day, I'm trying to, what season was he on? What is his real name?
Austin something, isn't it? I think. Or I don't know. Who cares?
Austin Mattelson.
Yeah, I thought it was Austin. Yeah.
Austin Mattelson. And I'm going to see the Big Brother season he was on.
Lana's on some Celebrity Real Life.
Yeah, she's the Surreal that. Life is back.
They're like, what'd you do?
Yeah, I crazy.
On, I don't know who else is on that show. But.
Big Brother 17 he was on. And they had like a twin gimmick on the show. So they had this thing where one of the twins was in the was playing the game, and then after a certain amount of hours, they would flip the twins, and the other twin would go in, and they could keep playing until the house guest figured out that there were actually two people and not one. So he was on that season.
Did he get both of them?
I think he was like show Manson with one of them at least.
Okay, all right.
But I remember, I feel like he did a speech or something. He was calling somebody Judas the whole time, which is kind of funny now because of that song. But that's all I remember. I just remember him calling somebody Judas, and he's like just big tall dude with tattoos. So let's get Jungle Boy on one of these TV shows because he's too handsome to just be a wrestler.
And they're wrestling next week. Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. We're getting right to it.
In Toronto, Christian's hometown.
So Christian gets involved and Luchasaurus has to win this one, right? I would think.
Yeah, because where do you go if he doesn't? Because Christian can't wrestle for a while.
Yes, yeah, he is. Maybe not. He has that sling. He might pull the old the old fake arm out and the old doink, you know?
Supposedly he's going to be out for months and months, though. I don't know, unless he's kayfabing. And Jungle Boy said that he was going to break his fingers, his nose, his arm, and then him, I think. He repeated one, like, twice, kind of, that wasn't the great payoff to the line. But yeah, you know, Jungle Boy's working some stuff out. I wish they gave him better material. Not to say that they have to write his promos, but, you know, it's kind of help him. And maybe they are. Maybe it's just the delivery he's kind of screwing up on. But
I thought he had better. I think they had like better conviction than he normally did.
Yeah.
Like in his promo. I thought
when he first came out and he got really pissed off, I think the crowd bought it. It's just everything after that wasn't as good.
Once you said you broke my heart, and everyone's just like, ugh.
All right. Friday Night Rampage, Death Triangle versus the Dark Order, Tony Nese and Josh Woods versus the Varsity Blondes, Ty and Anna Jay against Madison Rain and Sky Blue, and then Mox, Claudio, and Wheeler Yuta against Private Party and Roosh. Why is that the match? I'm trying to figure out, like, was there something that happened for that to be the match, or is that just the match?
They just announced it, which is fine. They can announce it's a match.
Private Party came out.
Oh, yeah, they came out. That's
and
right,
then Mox kind of mean mugged him, and then they walked away. Maybe that was it.
Yeah.
And then Battle of the Belts. You know, I thought these Rampages were going to get better, and I guess you have Mox in the main event, Claudio in the main event. Those are two guys. Wheeler, you're building up Wheeler, so you're gonna get a nice little babyface win there. But then, so they have Friday Rampage is live, and they're doing a second hour of Rampage as Battle of the Belts. Jade versus Willow, FTR versus the Gates of Agony. I guess that's probably going to be the main event over Pac versus Trent, and then Pac versus Trent. And I'm just like,
I don't know.
Man,
Pac,
I don't know.
Versus Trent had promo time. They gave him
promos. Yeah, they did. I just don't know. It's like, what makes me want to watch Battle of the Belts outside of the fact that if I just wanted to watch wrestling? Because now here's why I say that. You already mentioned SmackDown. What is SmackDown? SmackDown is the go-home show for the WWE pay-per-view on Saturday night. So am I going to watch 2 hours of AEW, 2 hours of WWE, and then a 3 hour pay-per-view? Like, I'm not everyone's going to watch it like that, but like that's kind of what's up for debate, right? And to me, I look at all of that stuff and I go, okay, if I'm going to watch some of this stuff now, Friday, wild card, baseball wild cards going on. You know, the first time they've ever done this best of three, and there's going to be four games on Friday, four games on Saturday, four games on Sunday. Yep. If there's still games for Sunday. And I'm just like, do I watch 2 hours of Rampage or Rampage Battle of the Belts and then SmackDown? I think I'm probably going to say, you know what? I'm just going to watch that Saturday night pay-per-view because the wrestling's probably going to be better on that show than on these other shows, right?
Rampage, Battle of Belts, that's a DVR. You kind of just throw it on when you kind of find the time.
Yeah. The White Rabbit may be figured out. We may finally see what that's all about.
Plus, you have Roman and Sammy. That stuff's really hot. That whole Bloodline deal.
You know what's interesting, though? So I'm actually not sure if Roman's going to be on SmackDown because I know he's not on the pay-per-view. He doesn't have a match on the pay-per-view, but what they're saying is he's going to show up on the season debut of Raw.
I thought he was going to be on SmackDown.
Maybe. It's possible. I may have missed it, but I know they made a pretty big deal about him being on Raw. And then, you know, the only thing that pay-per-view is missing, the Extreme Rules show, it's just missing a main event. Like, it's up and down. It's a really good card. It just doesn't have a main event on that show.
Yeah. It's another one I do watch. All these stuff, I'll probably watch here and there.
Yeah.
Pick and choose.
All right. And then Dynamite in Toronto next Wednesday. Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus. Swerve versus Daddy Ass. And then Jericho and Danielson 3. What is a trilogy with a tagline? Because it's not number 2, because that's Electric Boogaloo. What was like Friday the 13th part 3? Did they have like a tagline on that?
No, it's part 3. Four was the final chapter.
Final chapter, yeah, it was 4.
Yeah,
whatever.
This is a rise of ROH. I don't know.
And then we have our main event, Jericho and Sammy versus Danny Garcia and Bryan Danielson. For Jericho and Danielson having this match next week, Bryan Danielson sure was on the outside, laid out, watching for a lot of this match. The story was
Daniel Garcia and Jericho. That's what they're focusing on.
I know they were, but it didn't seem like that's where the heat was, right? Like when they finally decided to fight, the crowd. I mean, it's possible the crowd was tired.
Yeah,
but I'm just like,
I know,
I get it, but like Jericho and Danielson is the match that they're building to. So I thought there was going to be more stuff between them. There's a really bad looking situation here. So Daniel Garcia is going to pin Sammy and he looks back to see where Jericho is.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of looks back and then he sees Jericho And then he kind of like slowly, you know, starts to lay over the top of Sammy. And yeah. then he's still looking at Jericho. And then he makes sure, he spreads out his legs so far so that it's so close to the rope so Jericho can pull on it. And I, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, is it possible Jericho was in the wrong spot? But I know that Jericho, as the vet and the pro that he is, he was going to get there no matter what. Like, he wasn't going to let that, you know, problem. But you, do you think that there was a possibility that Jericho was in the wrong spot and maybe Garcia was helping him out?
Or Garcia was going too early to that spot, right?
Yeah, it just seemed like Jericho there was some trust there that didn't happen. And I thought it, the especially the way that they shot it, I thought it looked really JV.
There were some issues even earlier when Garcia got the sharpshooter on.
That was a bad one. That was a bad sharpshooter.
Well, he got the sharpshooter on Jericho in that corner, and you can see Jericho talk to the ref like, "Where's Sammy?" She's not even looking at Jericho. She's looking at where Sammy's at to tell Jericho where Sammy's at. And Sammy springboards in the ring, super kicks, then runs over to the dive out. It's like Jericho's probably livid at that. Like, I'm sitting there in the stand. A lot of bad reffing in this show. Actually, I forgot to bring it up. I got that Bryce Rensburg, man. Fucking.
I was waiting for this one.
Did you see what he did this a couple times? First of all, in the match with MJF and Wheeler Yuta. Remember the spot where they built to where Yuta finally hit the splash?
Mm-hmm.
And MJF a couple times was rolling out of the way?
Yeah.
Bryce Rensburg, his sister, is disgusted with MJF moving out of the way. Like, can you believe it? What are he's doing? Like, he's getting out of the way. You're supposed to be impartial. Why are you disgusted with him? He's not doing anything illegal. He's just getting out of the way because he's want to get hit with this move. And then in the Brian Cage Wardlow match, when they opened up with those punches and Cage is, you know, throwing punches in the corner on Wardlow, Bryce Rensburg gets in there and separates him. Cage turns his back. And Bryce Rensburg shoves him in the back. He pushes him. I was Brian's probably too stupid to realize what happened, but I probably didn't. But fuck you, dude. What are you doing? Why are you putting your hands on the wrestler like that? You broke him up. There's no need to shove him. Oh God. And the same thing. Okay, same thing in MGF. Another spot in the Wheeler Yuta match drove me nuts. The spot where you know MGF rolled out of the way. Bryce Rimmer shows disgust. Like, I can't believe a guy would try to get away without getting hit the move. Wheeler Yuta jumps up. MJF's begging off in the corner. Bryce goes to stop Yuta because MJF's in the corner. And he wants, you know, MJF to get out of the corner, give him some space, let him get out of the corner. But Yuta's so enraged and wants to get after MJF, he takes Bryce and he moves him, turns him around and moves him behind him. Like, and Bryce just keeps walking straight to the corner like a robot. And then that's where MGF grabs the tights and pulls Yuta into the corner, right? Because he illegally grabbed the tights and pulled them. But the ref, and he turns around like, whoa, what happened? Whoa, what did I miss? I wish they could see me. It's like, whoa. It's like, fucking, these AW referees fucking suck. They are horrible. And it's like, oh my goodness. And it's like, and same thing with Aubrey. Like, she's like such a bunch of hot doggers in this. You know, other than Stefan, he's a good rep, but he knows he came from some good coaching in NXT. They teach their refs correctly. But God damn, everyone else is just
if we hit our overrun, it is because of this last segment. By the way,
all right.
Let me see. Well, what time are we at? Oh, 1:33. We're 3 minutes into the overrun.
Well, it was well worth it.
All right. So the end of this match is Garcia is he's got Sammy in something, and then Jericho has the belt, hits him in the face. Sammy covers. Jericho gets the pin. I mean, Sammy gets the pin. And at this moment, when we're talking about this overrun, I'm like, okay. They've got like a minute. What are they going to do that make us believe that the next time they do an overrun, it's going to be worth it and we're going to have to tune in because it's going to be special? It was Jericho holding up the belt.
Yep.
That was it.
pulling back the curtain here, we got a text from Brian Alvarez that gave us 15 extra minutes. So.
Oh, well, that's actually good, but it's kind of a joke with the We're Live Pal, too, because if Lance Storm comes on right after Andrew and I, and if we come up to it 30 seconds before he's supposed to go live, we get a DM that says something to the effect of like, all right, time for the main event. Go home.
Yeah. Gotta hit your marks, guys. Come on. We're live, pal.
Yeah. Yeah. But because we're live. Like, you never know. It's live TV. Anyway. All right. We'll be back. I'll be back with Larry Dallas next week in this same time slot. And then John and I will be back the following week. We'll have to figure out what, if we want to do it Tuesday, if we want to go Wednesday, if we want to change it up a little bit. And I don't know. We'll figure it out. We got a couple weeks to figure it out. So we'll be back this show next week, John and I in 2 weeks. So just keep checking the feed. And for John, I am Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.